They told me much, but little that I can now remember, those strong women who worried over me as I grew. Only random names, odd facts, sepia glimpses live on in my mind. A chance remark, the name of a flower, Sweet Williams, pinks, bachelor buttons, snow on the mountain, cowpen daisy. My grandmother told me of the bluebonnet's name. Those blue spires bloomed for the Indians, for her, for me. Wildflowers of sere Texas prairies, or carefully tended, sparingly watered yards, cut and placed in mason jars. Now I puzzle how long the knowing of names will last in the familiar slide of all beyond a known horizon. Each spring, summer, fall, I've seen blues, pinks, and yellows, embroidery on bright or dull green, planned travel to see the brightest and best sights, patches of delight covering the land I know. A quilt handed down from my mother survived hurricanes and carelessness, faded to the softest of yellows and pinks. Gladys, Ola, Jewel, Asley. Each name evokes a square of memory, a bemused look, a stooped back, an erupting laugh, a dog trot furnished with fern and wicker, a bequeathed cookbook, yeast rolls. I fold the quilt with care, worry about spots so worn that they show the thin batting. Might a granddaughter do the same? Touch with care? Love what has been? Will she look at the land, listen as her mother might tell her, as my mother told me, that in summer's heat only the dull yellow flowers are strong enough to last?
We are here to mourn, to grieve, to remember. This year we must add to those we mourn 11 Jews slaughtered in the deadliest attack on Jews in U.S. history, and 2 African-American grandparents who were murdered at the grocery store when the gunman could not gain entrance to an African-American church where he wanted to do his hate killing. We burn these candles in their honor. This year, our grief must extend to trans people who are under threat from the government's new proposed regulation that would eradicate federal recognition of an estimated 1.4 million transgender Americans. It would exclude an entire population from civil rights protections. This year, Dia de los Muertos was colored by a spewing rhetoric of violence toward the thousands of people from Central America who are trudging north towards the U.S.-Mexico border. While there is a legal obligation to hear asylum claims in our country, we have not assembled additional people to welcome, to hear, to help. Instead, the president announced that he would send 5,200 troops to the border. We are here to mourn, to grieve, to remember. And certainly we call to mind our beloveds who are no longer with us. This year alone has contained many losses in our covenant family. Will you turn to a person near you and say the names of those who are personally remembering this day? What we do here is important, and this year in particular, we must open our mourning to the greater community. We cannot let these days of ritual remembrance and mourning pass this year without a larger call for lament. It is time, as the prophet Jeremiah says, to summon the wailing women. Consider and call for the wailing women to come. Let them quickly raise a dirge over us, so that our eyes may run down with tears and our eyelids flow with water. Death has come into our windows. It has entered our palaces to cut off the children from the streets and the young men from the squares. Death has come into our windows. It has entered our palaces. It has cut off the children. We're approaching another anniversary of the slaughter of 20 first graders at Sandy Hook Elementary School. It's not even been a year since the massacre at First Baptist Church of Sutherland Springs, the deadliest shooting in a house of worship in American history. Hate speech fills the air. Hate in response to violence will only bring more violence, and violence in response to hate will only bring more hate. We need lament. We need lament. Lament is a revolutionary act. It is vital if we want to change what is wrong. We must face the pain of the needless loss of human life, of the daily threats, especially to Black, brown, and trans bodies. Lament lingers with the realities of shattered lives. It refuses to let the next news cycle erase the pain or the need for change. Lament ensures that questions of justice are asked. It makes clear that things are not okay, but it doesn't stop there. Lament suggests that what is wrong can be changed. It insists that we get involved in the changing. When bombs are being sent in the mail, when hate-filled humans have such easy access to weapons of slaughter, when vitriol is spewed by our leaders, when people seeking safety are treated worse than dogs, when religion is used to justify evil, when another Black mother weeps, when hate in America murders a Holocaust survivor, my God, we cannot be silent. We must weep. We must join our voices with the wailing women until we are heard and change occurs. Lament stands in the face of violence, of hatred and oppression, and it proclaims, it weeps, it shouts that justice can overcome oppression, that love can overcome hatred, that compassion can overcome violence, that welcome can overcome hostility. Our ritualized days of mourning will end, but our lament has only just begun. We cannot let violence and hate win. Within each of us is tremendous capacity. We have the capacity for great cruelty and violence, and we have the capacity for compassion and peace. We must sound our lament loud enough and long enough that we are able to call ourselves and each other out of fear, out of violence, and into our capacity to love, to work for justice, to create peace. Amen.
Last night was a wonderful night of celebration for our church family. Our new fellowship hall was packed full of members of the Covenant community, sharing a delicious meal, telling stories, singing together, and giving thanks for all the hard work that went into making that new space a reality. As I looked around the room, I couldn't help but be struck by what a fine group of people you are, and how many and strong are the strands in the web that binds us together. I'm going to give you just a little snapshot of the people I was sitting with. Now, I arrived alone and late, and I'm aware this is the second time in 3 weeks I've had to mention being late to something at church, so it's probably something I should work on, but in this case, it kind of helps the story. Because I was late, everyone else was already seated, and I was just shown to one of the few empty chairs that was left. So keep in mind, I found myself in this group essentially by accident. There was Jean Cope, a founding member of Covenant. I thought of Gene as a Covenant fixture in my youth, and though I didn't know him well personally, when I was living in England, I enjoyed hearing that he and my daughter Anna had become conversational partners at Deacons Group meetings when Anna tagged along with my parents during her Rice days. They were Mary Lee and Sidney Burris, linked to my family through strong friendships across two generations. Mary Lee was my first piano teacher, Sidney my dad's regular squash opponent when they were younger men. When the Burrises downsized last year, their family dining table found its way to my house, where it now serves my family. Barbie McKittrick was there. Barbie and Mary Lee have been in a book group with my mom for decades, and Barbie stepped up to help me get a handle on a complex tax situation when I moved back to the U.S. There was John Hooker visiting from Montana. John is the father of two of my oldest friends. He taught me how to fill in a proper baseball scorecard as Jay, Jonna, and I sat through many an Astros game back in the 80s, forging an Astros fandom that led to a memorable road trip to spring training for me and Jay. And happily, there were opportunities for new connections, too. On my left were Ian and Joanna Robertson. And Joanna and I met just early this year in choir, and Ian and I for the first time last night. But we chatted about colleges we have in common, wine bottles that talk, and the importance of finishing your crumble and ice cream at exactly the same time. Or the real trick is to not, and then you have to get more of whichever one you've run out of, and it can go on as long as you like. Just ask Ian. It was a beginning, and I hope one of many that took place around the room last night. These connections are only a small sampling of the ties that I have to those seven people at this one table where I randomly sat. I could have made similar lists about the people at other tables, and I'm sure many of you, especially if you've been here a while, could do the same. For others, most of the connections may be new and tenuous, but with each investment of time in this community, they grow and strengthen, and new bonds are formed. For those of you who are visiting, I invite you to become part of this web of connectivity. But with this invitation comes a warning. To know these people is to love them. And as we are so aware this morning, with love comes pain and loss and grief. But I'm convinced it's worth it.